Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
That was the voice of Brian Brown, creator of the Brown Briefly. Every week, we try to live up to his high standards of hosting a discussion of current events laced with empathy, intelligence, sometimes not easy, humor, and progressive persuasion. Although Brian's concept was less is more, more or less, in reality, you could never have enough of Brian's magic in your life.
That's for sure.
Around the Zoom info space again this week are some old friends. Former airline pilot, commercial airline pilot.
Yeah.
Recovering back surgery patient. And all-around rock on tour.
Yes.
My partner in treetop flying, the terrific Truman O'Brien.
Whoa.
There you go.
Wow, what a nice intro. Thanks. Thanks,
I Craig. Know. Man. You're going to owe me several cookies for that.
I see that. I know that.
Historian skipper of the is it Vachon or Vachana?
Vachon,
I think. Yeah. Vachon. President of the Vachon Heritage Museum, Guardian of the Galaxy, Bruce Holman, who I do not see on our
I don't think
Zoom.
He's going to be here today.
He's off somewhere.
On the Vachon.
Yeah, points unknown.
Yeah.
But rest assured, Bruce is at this very moment saving us from some foul force of destruction. We are joined via Zoom by Kevin Jones of Indivisible Vachon and the Vachon Climate Action Group, who collectively strive to create a livable planet overseen by a government we can all appreciate or at least tolerate.
Absolutely. Thank you, Craig. And we're here under the airways of the port of Friday Harbor Airport. So not only may you hear marine traffic, but you can also hear air traffic. So a busy hub here.
We cool. want to hear more about that in a minute as to exactly what you are up to. This week, our special small talk guest is Don Marsh of the Washington Clean Energy Coalition, who will discuss the pending rate increase request by our utility, Puget Sound Energy. This is a rate increase that is now opposed by Attorney General Bob Ferguson, by the way, and if allowed, will make recent inflation reports seem tame. Mine is the voice of Craig Bellis, professional nonprofit board member, part-time international arbitrator, mediator, and aspiring SR-71 Blackbird pilot.
Well, hey, listen.
Purely aspirational, I might.
Ron DeSantis said that being an attorney is just like being a fighter pilot. So there you go, man.
Jeez, I didn't hear that
one. You didn't hear that?
No.
Oh, yeah, it's all over the news.
I'll take my compliments almost anywhere I can get.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
Boy. Before we dive into our small talk segment, let me invite a moment of introspection from our Vachon world. Bruce is not here, so we will imagine what his answers would be. Kevin, I understand you are in the harbor of Friday on the Isle of San Juan. Is that where you are right now?
That is where I am right now. It's a beautiful morning, a bit of a breeze coming up. We just had a two-masted schooner of probably 100 foot length just join us here on the breakwater. But I can tell you that a little bit of history, given that our historian is off internationally rollicking around, is that Friday Harbor is apparently named for Joe Friday, a Kanaka who was one of many brought to the island from Hawaii by the Hudson's Bay Company. Apparently Joe's real last name was unpronounceable. So apparently having just read Robinson Crusoe, the paymaster at Hudson Bay called him Joe Friday. At any rate, that's one theory for the name of Friday Harbor. The other one apparently is that that someone called ashore, "What bay is this?" The question was heard incorrectly, but was answered Friday.
I got a feeling that's a little bit of urban
that's
myth.
Good, though. Yeah. That's good. Yeah. Did Joe Friday go on to join the Dragnet cast?
yeah. Different Joe Friday, I think. Yeah.
Could be the precursor.
Okay. There you go. Some distant relative, perhaps. Yeah. And Don, How have you been enjoying your past week other than doing all of the civic activities that you engage in?
Wow. Well, first I'll say it's a real honor to be here with you. Actually, my last week has been filled with a lot of PSE stuff. We had some integrated resource planning meetings with the company, and I've been drafting responses to that during most of my free time. So I'm sorry to say I haven't been outside enjoying the nice weather as much as I would like.
Well, we appreciate the work you're doing while the rest of us are trying to play. Somebody's got to do it. So I, on the other hand, have been playing. Ingalls Car Show last week.
Oh, yeah.
Was great. I think there were more cars there than I've ever seen. Some really extraordinary automobiles. A lot of fun. Beautiful weather. Saw the Roomba Kings at the concert in the park, at Ober Park, who were just, knocking it out of the park.
That's yeah,
right.
There you
knocking
go.
It right out of the park. And then I saw the wonderful play, the Winghaven Park play that we interviewed Lisa Peretti here several weeks ago. And that play was terrific. I would recommend anyone who's interested in stage productions to go see that. I don't have the exact days, but I think there's four more of them coming up through this week and next weekend.
I've got tickets for Friday for sure.
Good.
Yeah, I'll hobble my way in there. I'm not going to miss that for sure.
Yeah, good. I hope you can do that.
Yeah.
Right. Take lots of drugs.
There you go.
All right. Hey, today in history, this is August 30th. This is the 242nd day of 2022. There are 123 days left in the year.
Oh.
On August 30th of last year, the United States completed its withdrawal from Afghanistan, ending America's longest war, now with the Taliban back in power. Mm. I'll reserve any comment further on that one. In 1963, the hotline communication link between Washington and Moscow went into operation. What are the chances that thing is still hooked up?
I'll bet it is.
Yeah, it probably. Yeah. I'm sure it is, actually. But I don't know how much is being used.
Yeah.
In 1967, the Senate confirmed the appointment of Thurgood Marshall as the first black justice of the United States Supreme Court.
A good move.
It was. Yeah. Thurgood Marshall, at one point in his career, commented on how the government is the ever-present example to the citizens of the United States, something we've discovered cuts both ways. In 1997, Americans received word of a car crash in Paris that claimed the lives of Princess Di, her boyfriend, and her driver. She actually died on the 31st, but it was the 30th here in the United States at the time. In 2005, a day after Hurricane Katrina hit, floods were covering 80% of New Orleans. Looting continued to spread, and rescuers in helicopters and boats picked up hundreds of stranded people. And finally, in 2002, Conoco and Phillips Petroleum merged to create, what else, ConocoPhillips. Mm-hmm. The new company was the third largest integrated energy company and the second largest refining company in the U.S., which is energy related and has a lot to do with what we're going to be talking about today.
Before you get to that, I have to tell you, you folks have been harassing me about my back. I had back surgery 2 weeks ago, and in the surgery prep, there was a nurse that had a slight accent, and I said, "Where are you from?" And she said, "New Orleans." I said, "Oh, and how long have you been out here?" And she said, 4 years or whatever it was. I said, "Well, were you there during Katrina?" She said, "Oh, yeah, we had 14 feet of water in my house."
Good grief.
14 feet of water. Can you imagine that?
You know, you just reminded me. I skipped right over you there at the beginning to find out what you'd been doing the last
week. Yeah, you did.
Yeah, I know. What else have you been doing there, Truman?
I had a shower.
Well, you were all happy. I'm sitting right next to you.
I know, and I'm due for one today, so okay. I apologize. You know, with this back thing, I can't get down my stairs, so I have to go to my cousin's house to take a shower. So it only happens every couple of days, and, man, I'm ready when it's time, I can tell you that. So that's the highlight of my week. Yeah, I mean, that's it. You know?
I know you haven't been doing a lot of traveling.
No, not a lot.
Or flying. Yeah. Hey, We're speaking to Don Marsh today. Don is a member of the Washington Clean Energy Coalition and the catalyst behind the latest WCEC, Washington Clean Energy Coalition, letter regarding the current rate increase. I thought I have trouble with that. Increase request by our energy provider, Puget Sound Energy. You have probably or may have read that the AG, Attorney General Ferguson, currently opposes this rate, as does the WCEC. Don is also the leader of 300 Trees, not the leader actually physically of 300 Trees, but the organization 300 Trees, which has worked in partnership with the city of Bellevue to meet average tree canopy targets for 2050. And another organization, the Coalition of Eastside Neighborhoods for Sensible Energy, which was formed in opposition to a PSE expansion project called Energize Eastside, which is now beginning construction of a transmission line which will deliver great financial returns to the company, but questionable benefits to the community. Thanks for joining us, Don, and I hope you are doing well.
I am. Thank you so much. About that stumbling over the rate increase, just call it a rate hike. That's very easy.
I should have practiced that. It's apparent that energy costs are important to everyone, and carbon pollution content of our electricity is of high importance to many Vashon Islanders, or should be high on their list of important items. Today, we've invited Don to answer questions on how to limit Puget Sound Energy's proposed rate increase and to let our listeners know how to take action to encourage PSE to deliver clean and affordable electricity to our islands. In a draft Washington Clean Energy Coalition signed sign-on letter to the Washington Utilities and Transportation Commission, the Washington Clean Energy Coalition, set the stage with this opening remark. Quote, in a recent notice to its customers, PSE says it wants to raise residential electric rates by more than 20% during the next 3 years, and residential gas rates are proposed to increase by 17%. With that background, Don, tell us who and what the Washington Clean Energy Coalition consists of.
Yeah, so we are an all-volunteer group of representatives from various environmental and civic organizations, and especially including some well-respected members of the Vashon Climate Action Group, like Kevin Jones, and also Virginia Lohr and Rob Briggs. These are folks that I've known for quite a few years now as we worked together on various PSE integrated resource plans. So our organization is known by the Utilities and Transportation Commission, and we're actually referenced in a commission order that was published last fall. And many of our members have been involved in the PSE Integrated Resource Plan advisory groups. Those are the plans that sort of set the course for our energy investments over the next 20 years. So we all sort of met there, and that was one originating factor or origination of our coalition, except I think Kevin has even some background that predates that. If Kevin, if you'd like to make that Vashon connection, that'd be great.
I'll jump in because, you know, there's quite a few of our listeners who I think recall that in about 2017, the Vashon Climate Action Group had a petition. It was at the Strawberry Festival. We gathered 1,300 signatures that weekend, and about 800 or more were Vashon Maury Islanders. And the petition was to close PSE's coal plants, of which at the time, I think about 30% of their energy came from burning coal. 108 Vashon Maury Island businesses also signed that petition. That activity was under the Beyond Coal campaign of Sierra Club. And then we started to, under their guidance, to ramp up our participation in hearings with the Utilities and Transportation Commission. At one time, early on, we flooded the hearing room. They had to bring us in shifts because they didn't have enough chairs for the almost 100 or more people who showed up. And it turns out that Commissioner Danner, who's still with the UTC, when he saw that there were a bunch of Vashon people, like probably 30 of us or so, he said, "Hey, I see there's a bunch of people who have to catch a ferry to get home. Would it be okay if you guys testify first?"
Oh, cool.
So, and we, of course, not being bashful at all, said, "Heck yeah, we'll take advantage of that." So, in fact, this whole activity that I just described led ultimately to this continued set of meetings and the new title, the Washington Clean Energy Coalition. So those who signed that petition, this is basically the third or fourth step in that whole campaign. And it's still going strong. And Don is, thank you, Don, so much for being here to kind of describe where we're headed next and the next step we're about to take.
Oh, thank you so much for that retrospective. I do remember that meeting. I was there and I remember seeing all the Vashon people coming up. And, that was pushing me farther back in line. And at first I'm going like, who are these people? But then, everyone who spoke there was so eloquent, well-informed. It really caught the attention, I'm sure, of the commission, but everybody else in the room was really thankful, for your good input in that process.
So, that there is a lesson there. You've been to all of these hearings, of course, both of you, Kevin and Don, and so often nobody shows up. There's only, a few people that show up at the statewide hearings. And when you bring in, 30, 40, 50, whatever number of people, it makes an impression on the legislative committees that you testify in front of.
Indeed it did.
Good. Yeah. Good.
And that's actually part of why with this letter that we're going to be talking about today, that's sort of one of the theories behind this letter is that we're allowing individuals to sign on as well as organizations. So far, we've got over 150 individuals who've signed on and about a dozen organizations. And I think we're the only group that's doing that, saying, the voices of individual ratepayers and customers are important in this process. And this is one of the, one of the easy ways to participate. Everybody is also welcome to submit their own comments or even testify at a hearing on the rate case increase that will happen on September 28th.
Before you go on, when you use the phrase rate case, what is a rate case?
That's a great question because this rate case is unlike one that we've ever seen before. So what traditionally happens is PSE builds a bunch of stuff, and then they go to the commission and they say, we built all this stuff, we need to recover our costs, plus about a 10% rate of interest that the state guarantees to PSE for building our electric infrastructure. And this is, in fact, one of the most profitable things that PSE does. People think they make their money from selling us gas and electricity, but those rates are pretty carefully controlled, so that the big opportunity for PSE to make money is in building infrastructure. So anyway, they build a bunch of stuff, they go to the commission and say, here's what we spent, now can we raise everybody's rates to collect our 10% interest on this for as long as those items are in service, which for many things is like 50 years of 10% interest. So anyway, that's what normally happens, but this is a special rate case that's going to go on that covers not only the last year, but 3 years going forward. And so it's exceptionally big, and it's a little bit speculative as well, because they're trying to recover rates that haven't actually been, they're trying to recover expenditures that haven't happened yet.
Wow. And the Puget Sound Energy has to try to justify, of course, this. They can't just go in there and ask for the increase. They have to have justifications. My understanding that what they have six primary, we don't need to go into those just yet, but they have attempted to justify their position, have they not?
Yes, in a bill insert, if you looked at, I think it was the last bill you got, or maybe it was the one before that, they had an insert that listed six reasons why they had to increase rates. And our letter directly tackles four of those. And I'd really like to focus on two particularly interesting ones during our talk today.
Okay, and we will do that. Before you do that, I see Kevin's hand raised conspicuously.
Yeah, I just want to mention that this whole process that Don described, where the utility goes and spends money and then comes to ask our regulators for a refund, essentially, they have to make prudent investments. And that is a term that is in the law. And the citizen activism that we've been describing, our goal is to point out whether or not PSE's investments are prudent or not. And many of us think that prudent investments are ones that are more affordable, more sustainable. And it turns out those are renewable resources like wind and solar, which are now cheaper than coal and gas. The utility, of course, as Don mentions, likes to invest in big investment projects because they get that guaranteed 10% rate of return. So our push is that we need to shine a light on which of these costs are prudent or imprudent, and therefore protect the ratepayers from this kind of inflationary price rises.
Okay, so they've listed some six justifications that they're relying on, and the Washington Clean Energy Coalition's letter, this letter that people can sign on to, and we'll give you directions on how to do that before we're done. That really focuses on four of those, if I recall. And today we want to really hone in on two of them in particular. And what are those two?
Yeah, so the first one, and I'll read it. This is what was in PSE's letter, their bill insert. It says, to decarbonize PSE's energy systems, to comply with state mandates, meet the expectations of customers and stakeholders. Now, if that's what was really happening here, I think many people who are listening to this broadcast are going, "Oh, clean energy, all right. That's important for our future. I'm willing to pay a little more for that." The problem is that that's not what this rate increase is about. So PSE's own analysis says that only 10% of the rising rates would go to clean energy investments. But we think that's inflated. The Northwest Energy Coalition, which is a professional group, has done its own analysis and found that only 3% of the rate increase is for clean energy. So by listing this as one of their top reasons for the rate hike, PSE is doing two things. First of all, anybody who's interested in clean energy, it will, be less suspicious of the rate hike if it's going towards clean energy. They go, oh, well, that's okay. But worse maybe is people who are actually, concerned about their monthly bills, especially at a time like this, they're likely to see that wording, that complying with state mandates, and they're going, our legislature, it's all the legislature's fault. And what's this Clean Energy Transformation Act that the legislature passed and now I have to pay for? So it's just such a deeply cynical and deceptive thing to blame the 20% rate hike on that. It's we really object to that.
I need to throw in something here. The energy companies are pretty interesting. I lived in Montana for a number of years, and the Colstrip mine in the Rosebud County, when that went in, the tribe is the and I think it's a Crow, or no, Blackfeet that owned the land, and they were negotiating with the coal mining company, and they were talking about the rates that they were going to be selling the coal for. And so the coal company said, well, what we're going to do is this is the rate that we'll pay you for this coal, except if, you know, we have to use it locally here, you know, some of the coal we're going to use locally here just to support our operation. We're going to pay you a much lesser amount for that. And so the tribe said, oh, yeah, okay, that's, you know, that's fair. And then they built the power generating plant within that distance. So the whole amount of coal that they were digging out of there and paying and burning, they were getting at that super low rate because they hornswoggled the tribe.
Figures don't lie, but liars sure can figure.
That is exactly right.
That's Kevin,
just wanted to throw that out there.
Yeah, Truman, I'm glad you brought up that history. The whole, the focus of closing PSC's coal plants was on Colstrip.
Right.
And the interaction with the tribe, a just transition, because that tribe apparently derives a significant amount of their livelihood from that coal operation. In return for that deal they made, now they have groundwater pollution that's very extensive, coal ash ponds that are just growing and growing. Right. It's a really an environmental challenge. The folks that Don is talking about are also focused on making sure that the tribe has an opportunity to move in a direction away from this polluting resource to take advantage of the wind resource in Montana, which is pretty darn good.
Yeah, I was gonna
say, use
it's
actually
very good.
The same transmission lines. So hopefully we can see that transition occur certainly in our lifetimes and hopefully in the next 10 years or less.
Great.
Yeah, and one other connection with the coal plant in Montana is that PSC's current rate case includes some money to invest in equipment upkeep and improvements that will last longer than the coal plant will be serving Washington. So Washington can no longer take electricity from that coal plant after 2025. But the investments that PSC is proposing to pay for using our money will extend the life of that coal plant beyond 2025 when it's not even serving us anymore. So that is one of the objections we have in our letter, that that's not what we think of as clean energy investments.
Yeah. Wow.
Okay, so getting back to those two main points, just so people know where we're at, did you want to move on to the second issue?
Sure. So this is another quote from PSC's letter. It says, to increase PSC's authorized return on equity from 9.4% to 9.9%. So, you know, it sounds not that much, just a half percent more, but realize what this is. We're talking about a 10% interest rate that's guaranteed for the life of these projects, and it warps PSC's behavior. They actively seek to make these projects that earn this rate of return instead of doing smart management of electricity, using technology, looking at, you know, very, very exciting developments in solar panels and batteries and wind. And PSC can't get as much money out of those investments as it can by putting big transmission poles in the ground. We think that unless PSC is demonstrating that they're improving our reliability and they're really making good progress towards clean energy, we don't think adding to their profits is the right move right now.
So, in effect, if the argument that you're making is that if we give them what they want, we're incentivizing them to do the wrong thing,
and that's
disincentivizing them for doing the right thing.
So. That's right. And this incentive, by the way, is a holdover from the last century when the state made this bargain with the utility companies in order to serve, you know, remote rural areas that wouldn't really have paid off for the companies if they had run transmission lines hundreds of miles out to some of these places. But the state wanted to electrify, every community. And so it said, okay, you know, we realize that it might not be profitable for you to do this under normal circumstances, but how about a 10% or 9.4% rate of return on whatever you do. And that's not only been attractive for PSE, but it's been attractive to Canadian and Australian investors who now own the company. And they really like that guaranteed rate of return, which is pretty high in today's financial environment.
Truman?
Yeah, this strikes me as the thing that we have in the airline industry, the essential air service benefit. And that's a federal program, but it's the same idea that we're getting air service to rural communities that would not be profitable for the airline because there's not enough business there, but they need the service. And we have places like Cordova and, you know, up in Alaska that have that essential air service. So it's really, it's kind of the same idea, but it sounds like they're kind of taking advantage of it, the electric companies.
I think an important point, and Kevin, I just one moment here. I think it's important to realize that this was a pretty good way to get our state, you know, electrified. It's a holdover now, and in fact, the UTC is now looking to change PSE's compensation model to performance-based rates, which would say, okay, we will pay you for making progress on the things that are important to our communities and stuff. And, you know, the whole state is electrified now. We don't need that same holdover anymore. So we're really looking forward to, you know, maybe the legislature correcting the, you know, this outdated incentive.
Kevin?
Yeah, thanks for making that point, Don. And the other thing I think we mentioned before, but just to tie a bow around this, you know, the company is really incentivized to find the most expensive infrastructure to put in the ground, because that 10% return on investment is multiplied by however much they spend. So again, the globally cheaper and increasingly more affordable opportunities like wind and solar do not look like an economic benefit to our utility. So we need to change their view of that. The legislature needs to change their view of that. And pushing back on this rate case is one way to make sure that that transition can happen.
Absolutely.
Truman.
Yeah, I have a question. I mean, I understand that there's a way in using, I don't know, computer programming or something to increase the efficiency of the distribution of
electricity. Absolutely. That's very exciting stuff that's happening in the industry right now.
Right.
Mostly software, machine learning, you know, an automated system can begin to understand the daily patterns of electricity use that we have, especially when you have resources like batteries in the system. There's a certain time of day when those batteries need to be charged, and you know there's not as much demand, so there's extra capacity to charge the batteries. But then during peak hours, when, you know, typically like when we all come home from work and, you know, turn on the stoves and the heat and whatever, turn on all our lights, that's when the system is typically endures the maximum strain. It's also the time when PSE turns on their gas powered peaker plants, and so those are the dirtiest resources, except for coal, really the dirtiest resources on our system right now. The more that we can use smart energy management and batteries, and other, that's not just batteries, but that's an easy example for people to understand. The more we can do that, the quicker we can reduce our emissions. And that's really an exciting field where PSE is kind of dragging their feet.
You know, the other question I had that related to that, I believe, is that I know that for some time there was a benefit for folks who did solar on their own, and that if they had excess energy, that they got paid for that. Not only would it run their meters backwards, but it also would also get paid. And I understand that's gone away now.
Yeah, that was a state funded, taxpayer funded benefit.
Oh, okay.
So PSE administered it, you know, it might seem a little unfair, like the people who were most able to put those solar panel systems in were, you know, probably a little bit higher up on the income ladder, but there are benefits to the whole community to reducing emissions and also supporting our native or our state solar industry. So that was really designed to kind of kickstart our solar industry here in Washington.
That's what I thought. And full disclosure, I'm a commissioner of our King County Airport District number one here on the island. And one of the things that we were looking at was to put solar panels on all of our hangars, because we have a number. I mean, gee whiz, we have a, I don't know how many square feet total it is, but it would be significant. And yeah, we think it would be a significant benefit to the island, because we'd be generating way more than we'd ever use there and back into the grid. But do you know if there are any subsidies or any way that that can be assisted? Because it's quite expensive for us to do.
I don't know if the new Inflation Reduction Act provides any help in that respect. I haven't studied it to that level of detail. But these are good investments, and there's still a lot of empty roof space in our communities that we can use that not only to reduce our emissions, but actually increase the reliability of our grid. Because electrons that are coming from your roof have a lot less infrastructure to pass through to power your community. And, you know, that infrastructure is typically what gets damaged in winter storms or an earthquake. And so, you know, if we want resiliency, this is a great way to bake that into our communities.
Kevin?
Wow. And yeah, speaking of winter storms and power outages on Vashon, you're speaking to the heart of our people. You know, there have been, and I have not looked into them in enough detail to answer your question, Truman, but state legislature has been grappling with community solar types of legislation. And I would have to do some research to see what either it has been passed or what is either on the verge of passing. And so as we move through this process, you know, the Vashon Climate Action Group will let folks know about the hearing that Don mentioned. We'll let folks know about how they can raise their voices around issues like community solar, where possibly, you know, the Vashon Airport could make that kind of contribution.
Yeah, I would think. I mean, gosh, it looks to me like that would be a real benefit to the community, you know, and so I'd like to see somehow to get that done and get some subsidy to do it, you know.
I noted in our neighborhood, there's a middle school that has a beautiful expanse of south-facing roof, and it was bare. And so I started saying, gee, you know, solar panels should be put up there. And then it took just one more step. I called my favorite solar installer and said, could you take a look at that and just estimate how much resource there would be there? And they said, oh, sure, that's easy for us to do. And I didn't hear anything more until about, I'd say maybe a year later, I was jogging down our hill and there were solar panels.
Oh, fantastic.
They were magically materialized.
That is wonderful.
You know, I don't know if I played any role in that.
I bet you did.
I was very happy to see it.
I bet you did.
That's great.
So getting back to the specific rate case that this letter that the Washington Clean Energy Coalition has drafted, and I think it's pretty close to being in final form, is that right?
It is final. It's in fact, so people, we will give a URL for people to get to the sign-on page. And in the sign-on form, there's a link that takes you to the letter. The letter is 4 pages long. And I know that's a lot to ask people to read these days, but you can get a real sense of what we're talking about just in the first page. Basically, in the first 4 paragraphs, we've got the PSE's reasons that they've given for the rate hike, and you can see a 1 or 2 sentence response from us. And then if you need more detail after that, there's more detail in the following pages.
It's an easy
read.
I would
really encourage people to look at that, because
what is that website? What is that URL, please?
Okay, so the URL is tinyurl.com. tinyurl.com/PSE-rate-hike. So that's PSE-rate, RATE-hike, HIKE.
We'll put it
and
up on the screen.
We've already gotten about 150 signatures from individuals so far. About a dozen organizations have signed on. So we think this is going to be, you know, it's going to be an interesting input for the UTC as they consider whether to give PSC, you know, the full amount that they're requesting or some reduced amount. It's a very interesting action that the UTC has not seen too often in the past.
Kevin?
Just wanted to say that those on our Vashon Climate Action Group mailing list have an email from us this morning, so it includes that link. Go ahead and check that out. But yeah, tinyurl.com/PSE-rate-hike. Thank you so much, John.
You know, as I've been reading through the letter, and it is an easy letter to follow. It's beautifully organized. The arguments are articulated really well. There are nuanced arguments here. There are sophisticated arguments, but if you don't dig deep and you go 40,000 feet, it seems to me that what we're talking about for your average PSE user, which is virtually everybody that I know, we're talking about trying to save money and try to save the environment.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and it's trying to reduce destructive projects that PSE feels incentivized to do right now. This transmission line that initially got me started in all this stuff, it is clearing out thousands of trees from our cities, and those are trees we need to combat heat in the summertime. They also are very valuable for winter storms where we've got a lot of rain runoff. They hold the soil in place. So it's not to mention carbon storage. I mean, this is not the time to be taking mature trees out of our cities. So and that's described a little bit in the letter. We provide three examples of projects that PSE has pursued that we think do not benefit the customers, but are really just padding their bottom line.
Well, Don, we really appreciate you coming in and telling us about this and the work of the Washington Clean Energy Coalition, as well as the other organizations I'm sure you'd love to talk about that you're a party to and a founder, I think, of a couple of them.
Yeah.
You are welcome to stick around, or if you have to get to work, I understand you pedal across the lake
on an electric bike.
On an electric bike, that's
very
right.
Efficient way to get. It's far enough I could do it without the motor assist, but I wouldn't do it very often.
Right.
The electric motor is really, really
especially
nice.
If you're bucking a headwind. Yeah. So yeah. Thank you very, very much for coming in and sharing that with us.
I really appreciate the opportunity, and you guys are doing great stuff here. Thank you so much for the time we've had.
Oh, wait, one more thing. Truman.
Yeah, I just wanted to throw in. I did pull up the URL, the tinyurl.com with a forward slash, and the letter is very clear. What you're saying. Yeah, it's very, very obvious.
Well, that actually was the product of almost a month of work by our various members to try to explain complicated things in clear language that everybody
you've
could
done well.
Follow.
So thanks.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. Kevin?
One thing I'll point out about the letter, which we haven't mentioned, there is the link takes you to a survey, as Don mentioned, and within the text, there's the link to the letter itself. The survey is very simple. Add your name, and we'll make sure that gets added to the letter. You can also sign as an organization. So if you are a member of an organization, a leader in an organization, talk to your leadership, gain the support of folks on your group, and then you can also add your organization name, which will then appear on the letter. So you can join Vashon Climate Action Group, Indivisible Vashon. We've circulated this to many of the environment and climate groups on the islands, and we're in the process of doing that now. So your name will be in good stead, and hopefully you'll take that as a consider that step as well.
Thank you, Kevin. That's really good.
Great. All right. Thank you very much. Typically, what happens at this point and what we're going to do today is we move on to more national, very heady subjects. And I've got Kevin and Truman to fill in the intelligent part.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
we'll do our best.
Let me just start out. Yesterday, a man by the name of Donald Trump demanded a, quote, redo of the 2020 election. I assume he's talking about a mulligan.
This is not golf, Don.
He hasn't quite figured out who'd have the authority to do that, to just call a redo. He basically said anybody but the current president, I think. But somebody suggested that he was developing his insanity defense for the for the potential criminal prosecutions he'll be facing with that argument. I don't know what more to say about that, but Truman?
Well, it just cracks me up. I read this. It said that I should be reinstated immediately as president, or we do a redo of the election. We come throw
that's
out the election.
That's his fallback position.
Yeah,
is
yeah.
a redo of redo the entire election.
And so, what under what auspices are we going to reinstate him? You know, as I mean, it's like you know, crowning him king or something again.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, that actually plays into something. I understand that Kevin, you've been reading Churchill's four-volume A History of the English-Speaking People, which you are just now moving past medieval and feudalist times into the Renaissance. This history addresses what can happen when the peaceful transition of power is not commonplace. What are your takeaways from that reading?
Well, you know, I'm becoming reacquainted with this history, which is sort of startling. We all hear that, you know, we don't have a king in this country. We know that the founders left England because of, you know, a king that was a tyrant. But until you read the history and all of the things that happened with each of these transitions, you had the bloodline of the king, which may or may not have had issue, or in other words, male sons to take the king, the role of the king. You had the usurpers who basically were trying to assert their rights to the kingdom. You had a highest level of intrigue in terms of who survived, who was murdered, who murdered them. And they were rallying the nobles who owned the big landowners. They were trying to appeal to the people. They were appealing to the church. It was a mess. And the capabilities of the king at sometimes were, you know, very capable in governance, and at other times were just basically living off the largesse of the wealth of the nation. And so your rulership was extremely uneven, depending on the personality and the dedication, you know, of the ruler. So basically, it paints the whole story of why our democracy, as Churchill said, the worst form of government until you compare it to all others.
Exactly.
But why we have it and why it was so important to the founders and why it's so important for us to reject this notion. You know, this Trump do-over is could be right out of the playbook of feudal England and some usurper coming in and saying, no, it's my job. Give that job to me. The administration you voted for, yeah, persona non grata, get rid of those guys. That's exactly what happened in those times, but with violence. And hopefully we can avoid that in these times.
Mm. Well, wasn't it the people or the subjects who put pressure on to get the Magna Carta signed and to come up with some rules going forward that the country would adhere to? But
and the Magna Carta was discussed, and you know, this is Churchill's version of history, and you know, he was not a true historian, right? So his true historians were like, well, he didn't get it quite right.
Yeah.
But the Magna Carta was pushed by mainly the landed folks, right, who had a voice, who had the big castles and the big feudal estates.
Right.
And they were almost constantly at war with each other. Mm-hmm. And so they could actually threaten, you know, the kingdom with their armies that they would raise. Mm-hmm. And so basically through this whole process of them losing their land and regaining their land and fighting back and forth, they were all, I think, getting pretty tired of it all.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Magna Carta, according to what I've read with Churchill, is essentially, he says it's kind of boring, actually. It's a list of rights that pertain to those living in the community.